You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Thursday show, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. The Seahawks held their second consecutive padded practice on Wednesday, and it was a bit more of an exciting practice, but another sluggish one on offense. We'll be breaking that down later in the show. And I caught up with defensive lineman LJ Collier, some interesting comments on his 2020 season and his expectations moving into his third year as a member of the Seahawks. NFL analyst Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson host Locked On's Peacock and Williamson every Monday through Friday. Brian and Matt give you the national perspective all around the NFL, covering the latest news and insight on every game, team, and move around the NFL. Get your pick previews and much more every weekday with the Peacock and Williamson podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. We've had to wait nearly 2 weeks for it to happen, but it appears the Dwayne Eskridge era in Seattle is soon going to be underway. Some positive updates yesterday from Coach Pete Carroll saying that Eskridge and the equipment guys have figured some things out with his shoes. He ran really well this morning, so a really good positive sign. He felt great about it and didn't feel a thing. We got to build up some days of conditioning and start to figure out when we can get him back out. Rob, Eskridge has been on the PUP list for the entirety of training camp, dealing with a lingering big toe injury that he suffered during OTAs in a walkthrough. But this is about as good of an update as you could have asked for now at this stage, with him running, not having pain, making some adaptations to his shoes. It sounds to me like there's a really good chance that Eskridge could be back on the field in quick order after the team's mock scrimmage on Saturday.
Yeah, that's definitely the hope, and it certainly sounds like there is plenty of reason to believe that that is going to be true, and Seattle would be getting their sports car back onto the field for them. You know, Pete Carroll, just basically provide all the information that we've been waiting for. That's obviously very positive news. We report here during yesterday's show after watching the live stream on Tuesday, I saw Eskridge, as did anybody else who was watching the live stream, saw Eskridge working a little bit with former Seahawks safety and current receiver coach Kerry Joseph. And he wasn't sprinting. He was kind of doing a walkthrough, but still it was a very positive sign. And obviously Pete Carroll has just given us that much more of an update, that much more of an exciting, news about Eskridge. So yes, that is very positive news. As you said, Corb, I don't think it's likely that we are going to see Dwayne Eskridge suddenly make his presence in the actual mock game. No. But I think shortly thereafter, we can expect Eskridge back. And the other injuries that were going on with the Seahawks seem to be relatively minor as well. One of the ones that kind of popped up that I was concerned about was Cedric Abueyi, but it sounds like that's going to be a relatively minor thing, as well as with Al Woods, who they're basically just giving a veteran's day off.
Yeah, the other injuries for the Seahawks, there doesn't seem to be any of them that are really significant. Cody Barton might have to miss a handful of days dealing with a quad issue. John Rattigan, the undrafted rookie out of Army, he's missed the last three practices with a hamstring injury. Carroll said he might be out another week, but optimistic that he'll be back after that point. So they've been pretty light at linebacker. We'll talk about why that's been a big deal in practice the last couple of days when we get to our second segment with some takeaways from Wednesday's practice. But Abueyi started practice on the field, and then he ended up taking his shoulder pads off. Pete Carroll said it was more precautionary with his shoulder. Robert Kimdiche was the same way with a tight groin, and he started practice, eventually ended up exiting. Doesn't sound like he's going to be dealing with this long-term, not a significant issue. And Demaryius Randall, they just held him out because of a tight groin as well. Al Woods, veteran day. So none of those look like they are significant. There's no timetable yet on Eskridge, but based on what I've been told, it sounds like middle of next week is what they're really shooting for. Again, Pete Carroll mentioned they got to get his conditioning back up, but the fact that he ran well without pain, that's a really good sign that they're going to be able to accelerate that conditioning and hopefully get him back out on the field at some point next week. The one injury that I still think does not sound good, the other player that Seattle has on the PUP list, Travis Homer, This is starting to look like a situation where Homer could very well remain in the PUP list when the regular season starts on September 12th. And if that happens, that means he's got to miss the first 6 weeks. Now, this would allow the Seahawks to have a little bit of flexibility in the backfield if somebody gets banged up in the middle of the season, which inevitably that happens at running back. That would allow them to have an experienced player that's been on the team the last couple of years that they could activate to replace another player or fill in for an injured player on the roster, and they wouldn't have to risk potentially losing him on waivers. And so I'm really curious how this plays out the next few weeks. He's dealing with a calf injury. He's re-injured it, according to Pete Carroll, two different times during the offseason. And I've seen him on the field. I agree with Pete Carroll's assessment. He looks like he is in phenomenal shape. He looks like he added some muscle to his frame. But calf injuries are really difficult to come back from, and you want to wait till you are truly 100%. And it doesn't sound like he did that the first two times that he tried to return to the field during the offseason and ended up re-aggravating that injury. So they're just kind of waiting this process out. And if I had to make a prediction, it doesn't sound to me like he's going to be ready at any point in training camp. You might get him back late in the preseason, but it looks to me like this could be something that lingers into the regular season.
Yeah, that's the thing about these soft tissue injuries like that. As you mentioned, it appears that Homer twice was right on the verge of being able to kind of overcome this and just rushed it a little bit too much. So you certainly understand how a veteran like him, who's very much fighting for his roster spot, is going to want to make sure that he's healthy. And fortunately for Seattle, I think that we both agree, Corbin, that running back is about as deep of a position as the Seahawks have. That is very much the opposite the linebacker position. So it is a little bit concerning to see guys like Rattigan out, obviously without KJ Wright, Bobby Wagner and out for a couple of days, he returned. And so because the fact that the Bobby Wagner was returning, because the fact that the other injuries that we had talked about are either just veteran days where guys are just kind of being held out or just being relatively cautious, then I think that the injury front for the Seahawks right now is actually one that the Seahawks fans should be feeling pretty excited about. We are starting to see waves of injuries come out throughout all of the NFL, and of course with back-to-back physical, well, I wouldn't say necessarily really physical, but certainly tackles or practices with pads, then there is the opportunity to have those injuries accumulate. That's why I think it's a good idea for the Seahawks to have an off day here on Thursday, just to be able to give those bodies time to heal.
Yeah, in today's NFL, you're not practicing 6-7 days a week. You are going to give some of your guys rest. Veterans are going to be shuffling in and out of practice, and Pete Carroll's already been doing that these first couple padded days. That's why Al Woods didn't participate yesterday. Keep those older players fresh. It's just a different time period than 1990s when you had two-a-days and they were practicing 5 hours a day. We have evolved from that point. But that allows teams to keep guys healthy for the most part, and hopefully the Seahawks can continue to have good injury luck. They can get Eskridge back in the near future, and hopefully Homer is able to make a quick recovery. Some of the other guys that were out yesterday can come back on Friday or for the mock scrimmage on Saturday, and they're able to get their reps as they gear up for the 2021 season. When we return for the second quarter, we're going to break down everything that took place at the VMAC in Wednesday's second padded practice. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection. Reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. The Seahawks with their second consecutive padded practice on Wednesday. It was a lot more eventful than the day before, but I hate to sound like a broken record. It was another really rough day on offense, and there were some silver linings. I feel like we saw a few drives during the team period where Russell Wilson and his receivers were clicking. It looked like they were able to get into a bit of a flow. The problem was that they could not stop turning over the football. Five turnovers on the afternoon by Seattle's offense. Pete Carroll was not happy about it in the press conference after practice. He was asked about potential progress on offense, and he made it clear that he did not view this as a day where they took a step forward on offense, and their ball security was the big issue throughout Wednesday's practice.
Yeah, it's funny. Whenever you have Pete Carroll talk about, you even use the word turnover, you know, he kind of wrinkles up his face the way a little kid does talking about lima beans or something like that. And it was a frustrating practice to watch, Corbin, and not only because there were a couple of interceptions, both Russell Wilson throwing one, Geno Smith throwing one, but just putting the ball on the ground. And I mean, that is going to happen, of course, and not only because of running backs just getting the ball stripped. Of course, there's every defensive player out there with the inability to truly tackle. They are definitely going to be punching at the ball, but also just because of the quarterbacks meeting with the running backs. And anytime, just in that initial handoff, and anytime that you have a group of quarterbacks and a group of running backs, then, you know, everybody puts the ball in a little bit different place or whatever the case might be. And so that takes some time to work through, but it's still, you know, a week and a half into training camp with these professionals, you would have liked to have seen a cleaner, crisper practice, especially with today being an off day. As I just mentioned before, I salute the Seahawks for giving the players the day off today. There's a lot of head coaches out there with that kind of militaristic mentality that just, you have to be tougher. They want to return to the days of those two-a-days and that hot, chinny sun where the Seahawks used to hold their training camps, you know, on 100-degree days, the two-a-days. It was pretty intense, even if you were just a reporter on the sideline. But I think that as much as Pete Carroll and, you know, and the Seahawks deserve credit for taking a day off, I think there's also a part of them that's like, no, we're going to come back to the field because we were this bad yesterday. But I think you also have to give the defense some credit. And especially the where I would start off with our takeaways is with the undrafted free agent from Arizona State, Ashari Croswell. He had both of those interceptions. We mentioned one from Wilson, one from Geno Smith. And he did the exact same thing at the end of the minicamp. You know, the only time I've actually been at the DMAC to watch this 2021 roster, Corbin, Croswell made one of the big splashy plays there as well. And he has a track record of doing it. Six interceptions in two seasons as a starter at Arizona State before leaving early. And maybe the Seahawks have yet their latest undrafted free agent star who might be able to make the initial 53-man roster.
I don't want to put too much stock into one practice. You can never do that. But Pete Carroll, I asked him about Croswell yesterday. I was the first question, the presser. I was excited to hear what he thought because we know how Pete Carroll values corner and safety play. The secondary, that's his baby. And he made it clear. He's made plays 3 days now, and he has. He had a big pass deflection in Tuesday's practice. And the way that this played out yesterday, Ryan Neal actually got banged up during their team period. And obviously Ryan Neal's playing a lot of snaps right now because Jamal Adams is not practicing. And with Ryan Neal out, Quandre Diggs wasn't rotated in. The first team defense was out there, so they threw the rookie into the lineup. And what does he do? DJ Reed swats a pass away to DK Metcalf in the end zone, and Croswell was in the right place at the right time, picks it off and returns it 20 yards. So you're looking down the sideline, and a lot of reporters are pulling out their team roster, like, who's number 39? And didn't even know who Ashari Croswell was. And then about 15 minutes later, their second team session, Geno Smith, we're now on twos on twos. Croswell's playing free safety again, and this was the much more impressive play. Not that the first one wasn't, but this was veteran savvy by Ashari Croswell. Geno Smith's had a dang good training camp. He's played really well. He's thrown some dimes. but he got baited badly. Ashari Crosswell was sitting back in his single deep zone, and he just was kind of just waiting. He was trying to give the illusion to Geno Smith that your skinny post is wide open. Well, it wasn't. And Crosswell ended up jumping the route, undercutting the receiver, and intercepted the pass. And it just happened in a blink of an eye. I mean, it looked like a veteran in the NFL. And you could see Pete Carroll over on the side getting fired up. And so, again, it's one practice. He's at a position group. When Jamal Adams comes back, it's going to be extremely hard for an undrafted rookie to make the team. But at the same time, he's 6 foot, around 208 pounds. He's got good size. He wasn't credited with a missed tackle his sophomore year at Arizona State. And if you've watched the tackling drills, he has really good tackling form. He had a big hit yesterday that he put on a receiver, a big hit in training camp terms these days. Really physical player, great ball skills. So he checks off a lot of boxes. This is a guy that I thought was probably going to be a day two selection coming out of his second year at Arizona State. And then obviously last year got kicked off the team for a minor infraction, only played in one game amid COVID. So his stock went way down there. But this guy is a talented football player that has now put some of those other players vying for a roster spot in the secondary on notice a little bit.
I think that he has. And I agree with you. I mean, again, like running back, we're talking before, I think the safety is, one of Seattle's absolute most talented and deepest positions. So sure, you know, any kind of relative unknown like Crosswell is going to have a very, very steep climb to make this roster. But he does have legitimate talent, and of course, at Arizona State, he played for former NFL defensive back and NFL head coach Herm Edwards. And as I was mentioned before, some coaches have a little bit more of a militaristic or stern kind of style. Edwards is that. And watching Arizona State Sun Devils a year ago, Corbin, I know the wide receiver Frank Darby got a lot of love, but the two most intriguing NFL prospects I saw were in their secondary, in the cornerback Jack Jones, and Crosswell. And I thought that both of them were absolutely draftable guys, but both of them had kind of the personalities that made some teams nervous and had some off-field issues that teams were concerned about. And that's one of the reasons why Crosswell wound up slipping through the draft, unselected. But at the same time, he does have legitimate NFL talent, and kudos to him for taking full advantage of the opportunities that he is being offered to him. Now, it's kind of switching gears here. You're going from a player who needs to make these types of plays to, you know, one of the most reliable players in not only Seahawks history, but in all of the NFL. Bobby Wagner returned to the field, of course, yesterday after a couple of days off, just kind of dealing with some family issues. But it is good to see that he was back to his vocal and playmaking self.
Yeah, they needed him back with the injuries they've had. They're shorthanded right now at linebacker. And just the fact, again, you don't have KJ Wright. So you don't have that veteran you've played alongside for the last 9 seasons who knows everything that you were thinking, and you don't have to communicate everything. He can't afford to do that right now because he hasn't played many snaps with Jordan Brooks. He hasn't played any snaps with Daryl Taylor, who's expected to be the starting strong side linebacker most likely. And so he's got to be able to get up to speed with those guys. So for that reason, it was big having him out there. But it also was just a lot of fun yesterday watching him fly over the field and get really vocal. There was a set of plays during the team period that Russell Wilson tucked and ran, I believe, 3 straight times. And after the third time that he didn't throw the ball and scrambled, while Bobby Wagner was trying to chase him down, every time he was chasing Russell Wilson from his middle linebacker spot, he shouted at him, "Russell, at some point you're going to have to throw the football," something along those lines. And it was hilarious just being able to witness two Seahawks all-time greats there. And obviously it was a playful jab on the field, and that's what these guys do. Those two players have incredible respect for each other. But it was fun seeing him out there, and the entire defense fed off of having number 54 back in the middle. So it was great to see him back on the field. And the last thing I want to touch on real quick, we mentioned the sloppiness in offense. Alex Collins had a couple fumbles. There was a botched mesh point between Russell Wilson and DJ Dallas that the ball ended up hitting the turf. The interceptions that were thrown that Crosswell ended up picking off. It was just a sloppy day. What I did notice is you were able to see a lot of that multiplicity that Shane Waldron's wanting to incorporate in his offense, much like the Rams do under Sean McVay, where they move receivers around the formation. Sometimes they go into the backfield. They run their jet sweeps, all the fly motion. Tight ends go to the outside. Tight ends go to the backfield. They just move players all over the place. We're seeing signs of that on the practice field. Penny Hart is a former running back. That's what he was in high school before becoming a receiver full-time at Georgia State. They're taking advantage of that. There was a play that they motioned him into the backfield, and they pitched it to him to the right, and that's the fastest I've ever seen Penny Hart move. He rocketed down the sideline, then cut back inside. And I think if they were playing a normal full-go tackle practice, there's a chance he might have broke that for a touchdown. They ended up blowing it dead at about 30 yards. But it was a really impressive play. And that showed you the type of stuff they're going to be able to do with some of these really versatile playmakers in this offense. On the flip side, we also saw what happens when you try to get too cute with players that maybe are doing something they shouldn't be doing. When you run a read option and the pitch is going to a 6'7" tight end in Colby Parkinson, it didn't go well. It went about as you would expect that it would.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Read option with a 6'7", you know, 260-pound tight end. I mean, it's a testament to Colby Parkinson's athletic ability. The Seahawks would even consider it. But I almost wonder, Corbin, if this isn't the Seahawks obviously, you know, trying to create some new styles of plays. And as excited as I am envisioning Penny Hart taking that that jet sweep or, you know, that quick toss as well as Colby Parkinson, imagine if the players that actually are better suited to those tasks are put in the position to do that. Imagine Dwayne Eskridge taking that exact same run with his 4.3 speed. If Penny Hart ran a 4.6, and he has terrific initial quickness, I don't think his 40-yard dash gives any indication of how just lightning quick that Penny Hart is. But he does not have the breakaway speed that Dwayne Eskridge has, and I think that Eskridge could excel in exactly that role. And then same thing with the Parkinson run. I think that we've seen this from the Rams in the past. They've used Gerald Everett in exactly that type of role. I think the Seahawks might.
Yeah, they've used Gerald Everett in that role because Gerald Everett has some qualities that fit with being able to do that. But Colby Parkinson does a lot of things well. I don't think that type of a play, though, fits his skill set too well.
I agree. And that's what I mean, is I think that this is just the Seahawks kind of tinkering with some things and then seeing who can do it. But I think when it comes to the game, I'd be surprised. I'd be shocked.
Go ahead. Pete Carroll ran out onto the field after this play happened because I'm sure, as you can envision, the pitch did not get caught by Parkinson. It landed his feet and the defense recovered. Carroll sprinted as fast as you're going to see Pete Carroll go out to the field to have a chat with Shane Waldron. I'm sure he was probably telling him, let's add that to the Josh Gordon receiver pass playbook and make sure that it's never ran again. That's probably what was going on there. But you got to see the multiplicity that they want to have on offense. You got to see the good with it, and you also got to see sometimes creativity ends up backfiring on the practice field. But that's the good news. It was on the practice field. That's where you test things out. That play didn't work well at all. I'd be surprised if we ever see it happen again, at least with Colby Parkinson. Maybe Gerald Everett, they can sprinkle in some stuff like that with him because of his athleticism and his ability to break tackles. But it was just interesting seeing how they're going to be using some of these different players, moving them around, and a bit of a change up from what we saw under Brian Schottenheimer over the last three seasons. When we returned to the third quarter, I had a chance to catch up with Seahawks defensive lineman LJ Collier before a practice earlier this week. Going to be playing a chunk of that interview here on the podcast. Rob and I are also going to discuss briefly our thoughts on LJ Collier's 2020 season and what we expect moving forward. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all of your UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. LJ Collier had a disappointing rookie season, in large part because an ankle injury cost him most of training camp and all of the preseason, and he just never was quite right. He was not close to 100% during the season, played in 11 games, recorded just 3 tackles, and he was a healthy scratch for several games, including in the playoffs down the stretch. Not a good look for your first-round pick, but he was determined going into his second season to get leaner and be able to come in at full health and put that rookie season aside. And I think for the most part, he was able to do that, Rob. Not the most productive of seasons, only had 3 sacks as a pass rusher, but he did have 17 quarterback pressures. And really the thing that excited me the most, we saw the versatility, being able to play the 3-tech position and play big end as well. We also saw the ability to come up in the clutch. And that seemed to be something that LJ Collier did consistently all year, whether it was upending Cam Newton at the end of that game against the Patriots in week 2 to secure a win at the goal line, or his play in week 11, drawing a holding penalty on J.R. Sweezy in the end zone for a safety, made a couple big plays in several other games down the stretch late in the fourth quarter. Just seemed like he always showed up when the Seahawks absolutely needed him. And to me, that's a solid building block going into his third season, now playing at a defensive line where he's right now in a battle for snaps because of the depth that they have across the board.
I agree with you that he is very much in a battle because Seattle has so much talent along the defensive line. But as we've talked about a lot, Corbin, some of those talented players along the defensive line have been less than reliable. And that's what I thought that Collier really improved upon last year. As you mentioned, he only played in 11 games as a rookie, didn't start a single contest, started all 16 a year ago. And while he only, quote unquote, only had 3 sacks, as you mentioned, he had the 17 quarterback hits, quarterback pressures. He had 7 quarterback hits. This is a good player, and this is a guy that I think is better than his statistics suggest. His length, he's got very long arms for a guy who's 6'2", 291 pounds, his power, and then just his physicality and competitiveness. I've used this expression before, Corbin, just kind of describing players like a Jaron Reed, that he has kind of a dog mentality, a nasty, physical, competitive mentality. Seattle lost that with Jaron Reed moving on to Kansas City. I think that LJ Collier has that as much as anybody else on Seattle's defensive line. I was encouraged by his play a year ago. I think that he is a stark contrast to another player on Seattle's defensive line who has similar statistics, plays a similar position in Rasheem Green, where it feels like Rasheem Green is kind of flatlining and needs to step up his play. Collier, I feel like, is an ascending player. And so I really think that Green needs to kind of see a little bit more of the nastiness, that dog mentality that Collier has been playing with over his first 2 seasons in Seattle. And then, of course, during his time at TCU in the Senior Bowl, where he really caught the Seahawks' attention. That, to me, is going to be interesting to see whether Collier is able to take that next step in year 3.
And I'm expecting to see a lot of him at the 3-tech position, especially if they're running a lot of bare fronts, which it looks like they are going to be doing. That was one of the keys to their success late last year. And that really fits his skill set because he's not a great athlete as a defensive end, but when he's playing the 3-tech position, his quickness is top level for a defensive tackle. And he's got enough size. He's down into the 270s. He's leaner, but he's still big enough that he can hold up in the trenches against the run. And he's going to be used a lot in pass rushing situations, reduced inside as well. I had a chance to catch up with Collier before Tuesday's practice to get some insight on what he thought of his 2020 season and his expectations heading into his third year. There is some background noise. This interview was done at the VMAC prior to practice, so my apologies for that, but everything Collier says should be clear. Enjoy the interview.
Hey, LJ, I appreciate having a chance to chat with you. So I kind of want to look back at this offseason. I know it was a little more normal, not completely a normal offseason, but pass the time and get ready for the season.
Man, I started working at a new place called Sports Academy in Frisco, so that was a big big key in my offseason training this year. I added more training to it two times a day. Things like that, more pass rush work, more run stopping work, things like that. Really just change my eating up a little bit so I can be a little bit more leaner and things like that.
Specifically with the food, I know for me, man, everybody's got those things you don't want to give up. For me, it's pizza. But what are some things that you've had to compromise on a little bit to get yourself where you're at now?
Man, look, I had to compromise a lot. Really just not going out to eat at all. My girlfriend, nutrition major in college, so she's really good when we eat at the house. I just had to cut down smaller eating portions, things like that. Shakes in the morning, maybe something small for lunch. And then maybe even one dinner size in the afternoon for dinner. That's about it, really. And just not eating late at night, things like that. It's really, it wasn't easy, but it just had to own in because I was tired of being overweight and things like that, and not having my weight to where I know I can have it.
I know last year you mentioned that you were in the 270s. You lowered your weight from your first season. Are you about the same spot now? Or?
Yeah, about the same spot, just a little bit more leaner now. So just feels more light on my feet, a lot better, yeah.
Look back at last season. Obviously, your rookie year, missed almost all of training camp, missed the preseason. Felt like you lost that year. Last season, you get the opportunity to be able to participate in all camp. Looking back at the year, where do you think you made the biggest strides on the field?
Really in everything of my overall game. I got better at the beginning of the year. My pass rush wasn't where I wanted it to be, but as the year progressed, it got better and better. My run stopping wasn't there either, but everything got better, and I feel like I was a dominant starter towards the end of the year, and I really helped the team big parts of the season. So really just about this year, about finishing. I've let last year go and my rookie year. Those years don't matter anymore. Now it's about pushing forward. How can I be the best player I can be to help this team and help myself to get to a Pro Bowl or a Super Bowl? Oh, how can I help myself do that, being an all-pro player, playing at a high level? That's really what it matters today, just playing at a high level, being the best football player I can be at the end of the day. All that crowd noise on the outside, so that doesn't really matter to me. People are going to say what they want to say, whether I ball or not, whether I have 6 sacks, 7 sacks. Oh, well, why didn't you do that the first couple years? It's going to always be something. So I just try to focus on straightforward and how can I get on better at my technique, my pad level, my effort every day.
How difficult is it to try to zone out that noise? Or is it something where you listen to it, but you take a positive approach to it?
Man, people have been telling me my whole life I couldn't do anything, and I'm in the NFL now, so I don't really listen to that stuff. People are going to continue to tell me I can't do stuff. Oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. Well, that's fine. I'm glad you think that way. I'm going to let you think that way, and I'm going to do what I want to do.
You mentioned technique work this offseason. Is there anything specific when you look back? You mentioned all the areas you improved, but maybe there's a certain area or two that you were highlighting watching the film this spring. Like, that's an area I really need to address if I want to make the leap I want to make, making a Pro Bowl, for example.
Getting off blocks, things like that, getting off all types of pass rush issues and things like that. Last year, I'd get to the block and like that, but I wasn't really getting off and making very many tackles, and that's why I want to take up my game next year. And really just noticing more, like, from pass, play action pass, things like that. So really trying to make that leap in year three.
Last year it seemed like you really had a penchant for coming through in the clutch. The stop on Cam Newton in week two, the huge hold that you drew on J.R. Sweezy, your former teammate, in the week 11 game. A couple other games came through late. Is that something that you've always had, kind of that clutch gene to be able to come through towards the end of the game? So how important is it to you to be able to step up in those situations?
Man, it's very important to me, man. I've always been the type of guy that can step up when I'm needed. And this year I just want to make that where I needed every play, man. You want to make more plays when you don't expect it and things like that. So that's a jump from year two to three that I want to make, and really just be an all-around player, man. Just stop the run, pass rushing when I need to, things like that.
You guys have added some more pass rushers to the mix. Last year you led the league in sacks the last 9 weeks of the year after Carlos arrived, and almost everybody's back. You've got Kerry Hyder now here. You've added Robert. Looking at this D-line, what are the expectations? What is the potential of this group?
I feel like we're going to lead the league in sacks again. We have a stout group from ones, twos, and threes. We have a lot of people that can play at a high level. The competition level is very high right now. Everybody's competing. Everybody's working hard. We've had a good couple of days of camp. So I feel like the sky's the limit for us. I really do.
Looking at you individually going into this season, you mentioned clean slate. No more looking back at rookie in last year. Do you have any goals as far as statistics go, or is that something that you just put up the side and it's all about helping the team win football games?
I mean, at least 40 tackles, 14 TFLs, things like that, maybe at least 5 or 6 sacks. Something like that really might mess up jumping next year. Something that's doable for an interior guy. I play more interior with a little bit of outside rush, but I'm mainly an inside guy, so really I think like 6 sacks on the inside is pretty good.
Sacks obviously are the stat that everybody looks at, but you had 17 pressures last year on the quarterback, and you were consistently getting back there. So do you feel like that is the area of your game that you were this close a number of occasions, and this year you can really close the gap and finish some of those?
I feel like that definitely is one of the things where I can make the jump last year, because I did have 17 pressures, but last year I honestly should have had about 6 or 7 sacks. I just didn't finish. And that's the whole thing about this year is finishing.
Real quick, I want to ask you a close out. We talked about you individually. Now that you've acknowledged Robert here, you can't help but notice him bobbing up and down the sidelines and getting the crowd fired up and almost knocking over sleds and things of that nature. What has it been like adding him to the mix?
He has great energy, man. He's a fun guy to be around, man. He's a hell of a hard worker, man. He's the type of guy you need in the room. He brings good energy, man. He's always loud. He's always active. I've never seen a guy not in a good mood, so you need people like that in the room. He works hard to push the group. You can't help but lean on a guy like that.
Betting on the NFL doesn't have to be a guessing game if you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team favored picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day. Follow the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Check out Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. Coming up on our Friday show, Nick Lee is going to be joining me. The two of us are going to be dishing out our first 53-man roster projection of training camp as we prepare for Saturday's mock scrimmage. Thanks for listening in. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks.